Welcome to Fact or Fiction, history stuff for the history buff on HowStuffWorks.com. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/stuff today for details.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Gibson, joined today by a special guest, Jane McGrath.
Hi, Candace. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Welcome to Fact or Fiction.
Thank you.
If you are anything like me, you've been completely bombarded with news of the elections.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The question on people's minds, who will be the next president of the United States? I think the acronym for that is POTUS. But I'm curious to know who is going to be the next first lady of the United States, or the FLOTUS. So, and when you talk about first lady, I'm sure there are several names that come to mind. For me, at least, I think of Jackie O.
Oh, definitely. Or Eleanor Roosevelt.
Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Even going back to like Martha Washington and stuff like that.
Ah,
yeah.
The first first lady.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Martha was first lady, the title first lady hadn't even been thought of.
Really?
She was called Lady Washington. And it wasn't until Zachary Taylor delivered a eulogy for Dolly Madison that anyone used the term first lady. I think he called her our first lady of the United States. And then the term didn't stick until 1861, when it was applied to Mary Todd Lincoln.
Wow.
And then Webster's picked it up a little while later. It was in the dictionary. It became official. But until then, people had tossed around words like Mrs. President or just lady or...
It doesn't have the same ring.
No. No, it doesn't have like the same cachet as first lady.
Yeah.
And a couple of zingers were thrown in there, like Her Majesty. And that was a real insult if a first lady was
called
that.
Yeah, it doesn't seem right for America.
No, they were trying to break from the monarchy.
Yeah.
But first lady was tricky for Washington because she had no idea how the office was supposed to go.
That's true.
And I think all the first ladies in that era, the first era of first ladies, about 1789 to 1817, there's this book by Robert P. Watson all about the first lady, and he defines these eras, and he calls that one the era of queenly first ladies.
That makes sense, because they're very matronly and reserved, and they stay in the background.
They do.
Yeah.
It's like they're trying to figure out, what is the United States?
Mm-hmm.
How do I fit in? But then, after the queenly first ladies, we have an era from about 1817 to 1869 that Watson calls the era of common first ladies or idle first ladies.
Yeah, and that makes sense because the presidents elected during that time became more common men presidents, and so their ladies sort of followed suit, and they were the same way.
Exactly. Not as regal, more plain folk, if you would. 1869 to 1901, this matches up with the Gilded Age in America. And suffrage started becoming a bigger deal. First ladies themselves were a little bit more active, and they came into the office really well educated, usually with some pretty nice talents to their names. And then right around the turn of the century and after that, we have the first modern first lady.
And that makes sense because the president by that time was able to openly condone suffrage, and the president and first lady were able to together be behind a particular political movement that struck close to home.
Yeah, they were co-campaigners almost.
Yeah.
Not exactly partners per se, but they were definitely in that position together. And around 1945 to 1975 was the era of media buzz, and the first family was the subject of newspapers and the camera lens, and they were everywhere. And as we get later toward that era and television comes into play, that especially had a big effect. And we see first ladies starting to become a little bit more conventional again, because I think on the whole, that's what a lot of Americans wanted to see. And then 1975 until the present day, we have the totally modern first lady, and she is the president's partner at this point.
Yeah, she becomes much more politically active in of herself, not even as a co-campaigner, just by herself. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, and that raises an interesting question, and that is, what is the first lady supposed to do?
That's a good question, because a lot of it depends, a first lady sort of defines her own role, and it depends on her personality a lot, whether she wants to be active or whether she wants to be in the background. And especially because the first lady, the office of first lady, isn't listed in the Constitution by any right, so it's an odd role in that she can define it herself.
And we call it extra constitutional because the only way she can come into the office of First Lady is by marrying the man who is elected president. And so that right there sort of implies that she has to be a wife and a mother or a grandmother. I think that people would like to see her represent some aspect of the American family. She has to be a campaigner, like we've already said. She has to be a hostess at the White House. She has to serve the teas and the state dinners and receive guests. She has to continue a line of traditions, the Easter egg roll, the lighting of the Christmas tree, things like this that people look to, you know, just for a little bit of amusement. Washington can be very heavy sometimes. So we like to see a lot of children on the White House lawn. It makes us happy, or at least me. And more recently now than in the past, we see the First Lady coming in with a platform. And it could be anything from Nancy Reagan's Just Say No anti-drug campaign to Hillary Clinton advocating for child's welfare, or Laura Bush, who is a big advocate of literacy, for instance.
That's true. And I was pondering something about this podcast. Do you think the political parties matter to the role of the First Lady?
Gosh, when I asked you to be my special guest, I didn't know it was going to be such a hard fiction question. Gosh, that's tough, Jane. If we really want to look at it in terms of Democratic First Ladies versus Republican First Ladies and speak in very general terms, I would say the Democratic ones, who, for me at least, that means Eleanor Roosevelt, for instance, Hillary Clinton, we see them much more politically active. They attend congressional hearings. They help to propose new policies. They advise their husbands. They really are partners. Whereas Republican First Ladies, again, a generalization, are more partners in marriage. They tend to fulfill more traditional roles, you know, being the wife, supporting the husband and the decisions that he has to make. We look at someone like Barbara Bush, for instance, mm-hmm. and I think that it was pretty obvious that she didn't relish all of the responsibilities that came along with being First Lady, but she fulfilled them and she was better at the hostessing side. And I think she enjoyed that aspect more than policymaking.
Yeah, I think that correlates a bit to political philosophies in a way. Like you look at Democrats who typically tend to be a little bit more liberal and see a more active role of the federal government, whereas Republicans, as the contrary, they tend to be more conservative and like the federal government to take less of a role. So it sort of correlates to the First Lady as well. It's pretty interesting.
Definitely. And the First Lady, like the presidency itself, is an office that is not without its scandals. And if we to probe back, I mean, we could look as far back as a couple hundred years ago or even a few years ago and see what has been brewing in the East Wing, which is where Eleanor Roosevelt set up the first First Lady's office. Interestingly enough, Hillary Clinton actually requested that the First Lady's office be moved to the West Wing.
Even more involved.
Even more involved, so that she would have closer proximity to the Oval Office. Mm. Again, we have a very tight partnership that we see in that relationship between President and First Lady. But like I said, there's all sorts of scandals that come with trying to define an extra constitutional office. And I know that you had a few favorite examples in history of some first ladies who will drop your jaw, really.
Yeah, well, one big scandal that I found interesting was one concerning Rachel Jackson. It's pretty interesting because Rachel, you know, she came sort of from the backwoods country and when she was young, she married this one guy named Louis Robards. And from the beginning, it was a pretty rocky marriage. Like, he was apparently of the jealous type. And they soon split up. Things didn't work out for them. And a couple years later, Rachel heard that Robards got filed a divorce, and she was a free woman. So she, in the meantime, had met this gallant lad by named Andrew Jackson.
Oh,
and
yes.
She was ready to marry him. Mm-hmm. So she did that, only to find out 2 years later that Robards did not actually get a divorce.
Oh, my gosh. And yeah. The media had a heyday, didn't they?
They did. You can imagine what his political opponents would say. And he actually ended up getting into a few duels as a result of accusations about the scandals with Rachel. And she was actually an unlikely center of this drama because as a woman, she was a rather portly woman, let's say, and she smoked a pipe and a cigar, actually, which was common in where she came from, but not so much in the Washington political elite. So she was not really a big fan of becoming a first lady. And all the while during the presidential campaign, she was getting maligned. And so actually she died right before she got a chance to enter the White House.
Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
And Jackson always blamed her death on the media attacks.
And, you know, there aren't enough duels today. You
don't
see a lot of people going after the media and challenging them to duels. I think it was, Hugh Grant, I think, threw a soup can or something, some paparazzi a couple months ago. And, you know, that's great. Challenge people to duels when they put you in a bad light. No, don't. I'm not advocating that at all. I imagine it's really hard to be constantly in the press's eye like that. Even this past year, when Jenna Bush was planning her wedding, it was in newspapers, it was on entertainment shows, it was on news shows. You know, a White House wedding is a big to-do, and she ended up not even having a White House wedding because she wanted some, you know, smidgen of privacy to this special day. But you can't really have that privacy when you're in the first family because your life becomes a public spectacle. And in that regard, you have to tolerate all sorts of jabs that are thrown your way. And one of my favorite things that someone has said in regards to this bad press actually came from Hillary. She was actually quoted as saying, "I read stories and hear things about me, and I go, ugh, I wouldn't like her either." And I think what a great attitude to have, because you really would have to let things roll off your back, especially when people are saying you're taking too much power or you're not taking enough, you're sitting by idle. And that was a criticism that befell Mary Todd Lincoln back when she was in the White House, of course, during, you know, the midst of the Civil War. She became really unpopular, for one, because she was spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
She did this as a way to offset some depression that came from the death of one of her sons.
Of course.
But also,
and she also had relations in the fighting for the South, I believe, in the Civil War.
Exactly.
This gotta be, that puts her in a tough position.
Yeah, because her husband obviously was advocating for the Union. Mm-hmm. And then she had family who was fighting for the Confederacy. So she was a woman torn in two.
Yeah.
And the press ripped her apart. You know, she was a Kentucky Southern belle who happened to marry a man who became the president of the United States. And she may not have been prepared for that position. I think she thought that Washington was going to be all parties and balls. And during the Civil War, it was not, most definitely. And she would get terrible migraines and fits of panic. And, you know, I wish I could have been there to see this, but apparently, even if Lincoln were presenting a speech somewhere or at a rally where he was speaking, if Mary Todd were taken over by illness, everything would stop. And
really?
It was about her suddenly. You know, never mind the fact that people are dying on battlefields. And this is actually something that people in America said to her. You know, she was grieving the loss of her child, and they're saying, "Our sons are dying on battlefields. At least you got to be at your son's side when he died." But the attention was about her, and people were not happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
So all sorts of crazy first lady scandals out there. But I think that a lot remains to be seen in the upcoming years as the next president is chosen, and by virtue of that, the next first lady. So
it's pretty exciting.
It is, depending on, you know, what her platform will be, how she'll approach the office.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wide open book. And coming up, we are actually going to reveal Jane's presidential namesake.
That's right.
But first, a word from our sponsor, Audible.com. And our podcast comes to you today courtesy of Audible.com, which is a purveyor of online audiobooks. And you can go to www.audible.com/stuff and get a free download. I happen to love Audible for their history content. They have thousands of history titles. And if you've been enjoying everything you've heard about presidents today, then I have got a book for you about one of my favorite presidents, and that is David McCullough's John Adams.
Oh, I have a favorite president myself, actually, and that's James Madison. And there's a book called James Madison by Gary Wills. I recommend that one.
Another great read. And to see that and many more titles, you need to visit www.audible.com/stuff. As for Jane's presidential namesake?
It's Madison. My middle name is Madison.
Jane Madison McGrath.
Yeah, my dad was a big Constitution buff.
For those of you keeping score, mine is Candace May Gibson. Two great names. And for two plus like a million more interesting topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.